Welcome to the Conceive Baby podcast. My name's Tasha Jennings, fertility naturopath and nutritionist. In each episode, I share with you my best fertility tips and introduce you to world-leading fertility experts to help you improve your fertility well-being to create your healthy pregnancy. Welcome to today's episode of the Conceive Baby podcast. I'm fertility naturopath and nutritionist, Tasha Jennings. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with a guest who has been with me on the podcast before, where we talked all about egg, sperm and embryos, and that's the lovely Lucy Lines. You may know her as Two Lines Fertility. Lucy is an embryologist. Her career began with Monash IVF here in Melbourne, and she has since worked in Sweden, the UK, Ireland, Germany, and then back to Australia. These days, she likes to describe herself as a fertility educator and IVF patient advocate, with her sole purpose being to help women and couples find the information they're searching for that is science-based and comes from a reputable independent source. Lucy is available for virtual consultation and has also recently launched her Detox WTF program. Now, I previously interviewed Lucy all about the biology of what's needed to create a healthy pregnancy and healthy embryos. And today we're discussing all the chemicals we're exposed to in our modern day world and how if they affect that biology and our ability to create that healthy embryo. So welcome, Lucy.
Thank you so much for having me again, Tasha. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, I loved our last discussion, and I know the listeners got so much out of it in relation to, you know, that embryology and how egg and sperm work that I wish we got taught in high school that we really don't learn.
So much from high school health ed.
Oh, absolutely. But we now know more about the impact that toxins are unfortunately having on that process, on our ability to create a healthy egg, to create a healthy sperm, and that embryology process to create a healthy embryo. So they're loosely termed a lot endocrine disrupting toxins. So can you, I guess, explain the concept? What is an endocrine disrupting toxin?
Sure. So lots of people, when they hear the phrase environmental toxin or environmental chemical or toxic chemical, will get their guard up immediately and go, well, everything's a chemical. Or toxic chemicals, they think about acute exposures, the kind that might send someone to the emergency room with vomiting or seizures or skin blistering or swelling or something like that. And they think, oh, but I don't have any of those problems. And I mean, obviously those things can happen with toxic chemicals, but what we're talking about more is these long-term chronic exposures to a particular subset of those environmental chemicals that are known to interrupt how our hormones work. So, I mean, most people know the concept of hormones, and when you say hormones to most people, they go straight to estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. They go to periods, steroids, bodybuilding, and they forget about insulin, cortisol, adrenaline, serotonin, dopamine, melatonin. You might have heard some of these words thrown around before. If you've done a bit of biology, you might even know what they're for. But all of these different hormones act in different ways in our body, kind of like a symphony orchestra plays. You know, they play different instruments and do different things. And the chemicals that I'm talking about are the ones that are like little gremlins running around, turning the microphones up and down on those hormones. So they're making it so that the symphony doesn't play right. So we're not specifically saying this hormone interrupts, I mean, this chemical interrupts that hormone, but this group of chemicals interrupt all of your hormones and interrupt the symphony orchestra that your body is playing to help you digest your food, to change your moods, to affect how you grow your eggs, how you grow your sperm, the impact that that has on the embryos. So that's kind of a general, does that sort of answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. I think there is that that people are unsure about how it affects it. Like, surely, I get told, you're probably the same, have a liver. It gets rid of these things. It gets rid of these toxins, surely. And everything is safe. So surely it wouldn't be on the market if it wasn't safe for me. So let's unpack that safe message too, because that's another important one.
Really important. So I'm scrolling through my notes here so I can find the exact statistics so I don't give you the wrong numbers. But worldwide, there's an estimated 350,000 chemicals and mixtures of chemicals registered for production and use. And not all of them are toxic, definitely not. Most of them have in fact improved our lives, made things safer, better, easier. We're not demonizing chemicals in general. Yeah. But what we are doing is trying to look for opportunities to lower our exposure to some chemicals that we know are interrupting those hormones. So if we look at in Australia, let's look at the data here. Obviously, as you said, we assume that products for sale have been tested for safety before they go to market. But in Australia, we have the TGA, which most people have heard of, the Therapeutic Goods Administration. And that group was formed in 1989. So for me, that feels quite recent. Probably for a lot of people, it doesn't.
I agree.
But it feels quite recent for me. But they actually only regulate therapeutic goods. So goods that say that they have a therapeutic benefit. So yeah. Medicines or the face mask that says that it will make you sleep better or something that it says it will actually do, they will regulate those things. But they actually don't regulate any other things. They do not regulate any cosmetics whatsoever. So unless that cosmetic claims to have a therapeutic benefit. So if you pop into Kmart and go to get yourself a face mask and it says it's, you know, gonna, I don't know, smell like watermelons, then that's indeed exactly what it will do. But absolutely nobody has regulated that product.
Mm.
There is a group called the AICIS. This is the Australian Industrial Chemicals Introduction Scheme. And this group was established in 2019, which I think everyone will agree is very recent. Before that, there was the NICNAS, which is the National Industrial Chemicals Notification and Assessment Scheme. But even that one was only done in 1989. So still quite recent. Lots of numbers and data there, I'm sorry. But the AICIS maintain this database of chemicals that people are allowed to use or introduce to Australia. And in this database, they obviously only being established in 2019, there are a lot of chemicals on that database that have never been tested for their safety in human health.
Yeah.
So they state, and it's a government website, I can give you the reference to go and have a look at it if you want to, but there are 80,000 chemicals on that register that are registered for use in Australia. And less than 25% of them, less than 25% of them have ever been tested for their safety on human health.
Yeah.
The other 75%+ of them are there on a let's put it out there and if anyone reports anything, then we'll take it off again kind of thing, you know, innocent until proven guilty kind of situation.
Which is difficult when we're the guinea pigs. I know really I did difficult. See a study that did say that, you know, even a presumptive safe dose of these chemicals on that certain stage of development of these tiny weeny egg and sperm in the body may have permanent, irreparable impact.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, we do walk around and think these things have been tested, but the reality is they haven't. And the only way they're going to get reported to anybody is if you end up in hospital with an acute exposure. But those long-term, low-dose chronic exposures are being studied more and more, and we're getting more and more information about it. But unfortunately, the companies that produce these products are just too big and too powerful for these studies to outweigh them enough yet. I was watching that show You Are What You Eat last night that's on Netflix, and they were saying that there were 70,000 published studies showing the impact of smoking on lung cancer before they finally change the message to smoking's going to kill you. So it's going to take a long time for this information to come through, which is why we need to gather this information from podcasts like this one and start informing ourselves and educating ourselves to be able to make those changes in our own homes to have the long-term impact on our health and our children's health, even if we don't have children yet.
And as you said, we're not talking about a toxic exposure here. We're not talking about vomiting. We're not talking about rashes. And that's where we can be being impacted without knowing that we are being impacted. And I know we'll talk about, I guess, some of the toxins that we're talking about, but there are, as you said, tons and tons, but plastics are a big one that we know about. And we do know that BPA has an impact on sperm health. I know there was a study that said, among couples undergoing IVF, men with the highest BPA levels were 30 to 46% more likely to produce lower quality embryos. Another study said that men with higher BPA levels were 3 to 4 times more likely to have low sperm concentration and low sperm count. And I know there's been other studies. There was one that I think you probably saw it with the headline, Are Humans Becoming Extinct Because of the Plummeting Sperm Health? And I know even our sperm health, when we're looking at reports, they've reduced the parameters because globally we're getting poorer sperm health. Can we look at the impact on sperm health and plastics and unpack that a bit?
Yeah, sure. So we know BPA is bad for us. We've known that for a long time, and that's why every piece of plastic that you buy anywhere now has a little sticker on it that says it's BPA free. And so most people that I speak to go, BPA free, great, whatever BPA is, awesome, glad it's free from that, move on. BPA is one of a class of chemicals. So the bisphenols is the class of chemicals, and BPA is one of those. And BPA is the only one we've legislated against in Australia. So it is now not allowed to use BPA in plastic. But what happens then is they just use BPS or BPF instead, which are actually just as bad, possibly even worse.
So we
want to try and limit exposure to plastics wherever we can. But the good thing about BPA, if there is a good thing about BPA, is that it's actually very readily processed by our bodies. So we can actually eliminate it really quickly. Mm-hmm. But the trouble is that if we have a big onslaught of bisphenols, and not just BPA, but BPS and BPF instead, if we have a big intake of those, it's very hard for our natural detoxification systems to keep up. And so our urinary output of BPA is very high, which gives an indication of our toxic load of BPA and bisphenols in our body. And that absolutely has knock-on effects on definitely on egg health and sperm health, but also early onset period, early menopause, PCOS, uterine fibroids, blah, blah, blah. Great long list of a laundry list of things. So BPA is an estrogen mimicker. So what it does is it looks just like estrogen. If you remember, if anyone can remember back in their brains to, year 9 chemistry, we had those pictures of what these little individual chemicals look like in our bodies. So estrogen has it's got a little hexagon here and another hexagon there and little branches coming off and whatever, and it fits like a key into a receptor on the organ that needs that information from estrogen, fits into that lock beautifully and gives the information. BPA looks exactly the same as estrogen, so it fits into estrogen's locks and messes up the whole story and confuses the information that's going around. So it changes the messages that are happening through the body, which changes what happens next. And therefore, we end up with lots of misshapen sperm or not enough motile sperm or just not enough sperm, full stop. And if we can make, as I said before, BPA is a good one because it changes really quickly. We can easily reduce our exposure to BPA and have an effect on our whole body toxic load. There was a study published in 2016, but it might have been 2017, maybe even 18. I can't remember off the top of my head, but where they had a group of women who, and again, sorry, I'm not talking about sperm specifically, but women who were invited to stop using all of their normal bathroom products and change to ones that were known to be endocrine disrupting chemical free. And they noticed a 40% reduction in their urinary output of BPA in just 4 days.
Right. Yeah.
So we can easily and quickly make changes if we know what we're looking for. And, you know, that study shows us that we can do that. So we can apply that to sperm health as well. And men are making sperm all the time. So if we can make that change in 5 days and then wait for another sperm cycle, we're going to have a significant impact on the raw materials that we're providing for conception.
Exactly. So let's talk about women for a minute, because it's not, obviously there is, and I guess probably they're focused on sperm because you can see it in sperm.
Really easy to study sperm, which is why there are so many published studies about endocrine disrupting chemical impact on sperm, because it's so much easier to study than eggs. We can't study eggs because it's really hard.
And but that's the difficult thing with these toxins as well, I think, because we can't see the impact it's having. We can't even just do, let's do another egg test and see how we're going. Let's do another, you know, whereas we can do a semen analysis. And I love seeing the improvements, which is great, but we can't necessarily do that for eggs. And a lot of these chemicals, they're hard to find on, unless you know what you're looking for, and they're hard to see the impact. So you don't know you are being affected. You don't feel lethargic. You don't get a rash or anything like that. But how is this impacting women? Obviously it interrupts the messaging and hormones. Yes, they are messenger vehicles telling our body instructions of what to do. And BPA, we know it disrupts that messaging and that really important instructions telling our body how to make these things. So what does it look like, the impact on female reproductive function and egg health?
It looks like reduced egg quality. Now, this is a really big, broad term. And, you know, 10 years ago, if you'd asked in an IVF clinic, is there anything I can do about my egg quality, they would have said no. Sorry, all the eggs you ever have. A lot of clinics will still say that, unfortunately. Mm. But we see it play out in embryo development. So. Yeah. We know that the first 3 days of embryo development are very dependent on the quality or health. Health is a much better word. The health of the egg that came into that equation, because it is the egg that controls all those divisions for the first 3 days. The DNA of the new embryo is created in factories that were in the original egg. Yeah. It's how those factories are powered by generators that are in that original egg. So if we can, you know, do that, and it's complex, obviously, but if we can do lots of things, but in particularly reduce the exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals, that plays out in those first 3 days of embryo development.
Mm.
You were saying, you know, women don't feel it, we don't see it.
Yeah.
Because we're so conditioned to just be fine, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
And actually, and it's in a little bit of an aside, but not really, I'm postmenopausal, and I know that my menopause symptoms flare up if I've been a little bit more relaxed about what I'm exposing myself to.
Mm.
I increase, you know, the sugar intake increases a little bit, and sugar is an endocrine disrupting chemical, unfortunately.
Yeah.
If I increase my sugar intake a little bit, if I go, oh, whatever, I'll have my, you know, plastic water bottle, or I'm out for coffee with friends and I'll get a takeaway coffee cup. And if I do that too many times, even over a short time, like a week or two, my menopause symptoms are worse. So if we're a little bit more in tune with our bodies, we do see it. We do notice it in our moods, in how we're sleeping, in how we feel in general. And little tiny itchy rashes, if you've got a little bit of a predisposition to eczema, or they flare up in these situations, and you go, oh, yeah, I need to pull back that exposure a bit, and they get better. We do feel better if we reduce our exposure to these things, but we're so conditioned to just be fine that we don't notice it.
Fine is such a catch-all. I guess my number one for referral, and you're probably saying from IVF clinics, is when everything's fine, we don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And when you look at the results, you know, there is such a big, vast, and they're basically saying you're disease-free and you don't have any major deficiencies, and that's great. But when you're wanting to fall pregnant, you want to be optimal. We don't want just fine, especially when we're wanting to conceive. Like most women I see are, you know, late 30s, most over 40, we are cheating biology, and that's where these chemicals even more so come into play because we've already got eggs that have been around for quite a long time. You know, they aren't as healthy as they were in their 20s. That's just a biological fact. So we need to do a lot of these preventative strategies. And I know we talk a ton about that development of the egg. And I love the fact that the egg does really carry the embryology in that in those first few days. And that requires a ton of energy.
Yep.
And as we get older, we just don't have that energy. Well, so I like to fuel it, but
part of that is the obviously the reduced number of mitochondria or generators in each of our cells, and we can't do anything about that. That's
biology. No, exactly. Yeah.
As far as the detoxification is concerned, our livers don't work quite so well, and our colon doesn't work quite so well, and our kidneys don't work quite so well, and our lungs don't work quite so well. And, you know, all of the things that we've relied on all our lives to do all of that detoxification for us have been working really hard for a really long time because we grew up in the 80s and 90s where all our food was microwaved in plastic bags. And I'm about to sneeze in a second, excuse me. No, it's gone away. We grew up in the 80s and 90s when all of our food was you know, microwaved in plastic bags, and we sprayed ourselves with impulse body sprays, and we, you know, did all of these things that pushed our toxic load up very high and made our detoxification pathways work really hard. And now they're a bit tired. You know, 5.6 million Australians had liver disease in 2019. And that number is projected to increase by 25% to 7 million cases by 2030. So, you know, our detoxification is not working as well as it did. And especially as we get older, we need to just be a little bit more gentle about that.
And our livers haven't changed a great deal since, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago when there was none of these chemicals around. Our livers were still pretty much the same as they are now. So we're taking this really great machine called the liver, which is, you know, phenomenally amazing organ, but we're actually loading it with a lot of things that it is not equipped to handle. So, and again, we might handle it quite fine, but when we're wanting to fall pregnant,
yep.
Fine is not okay.
Not good enough. No.
Yeah. Yep.
And not just for conception. And this is something I'm really big on because people often feel guilty when I start talking about this stuff. They're like, are you saying it's my fault? Are you saying I'm not pregnant because I drank Coke or
no.
You know, no, it's not about that. Yes, this detoxification stuff and this reduction of our exposure is important for conception, but it's actually most important, in my opinion, for the health of your baby at the other end.
Correct.
So, you know, we don't want to just get pregnant. We want healthy babies who go on to live long and healthy lives. And preconception exposure to environmental chemicals is linked to ongoing health of children born from that conception. And here I'm talking heart disease, childhood cancers, early precocious puberty, early puberty, PCOS, endometriosis, babies born, baby girl fetuses who were exposed to BPA in utero go through puberty 6 months earlier than their counterparts. There's one about baby boys too. Baby boy fetuses exposed to BPA in utero have a smaller anogenital distance, so that's the distance from the anus to the scrotum, and a smaller anogenital distance is linked to poorer sperm parameters. So going on to be less fertile men. So, you know, the exposure to these chemicals is not just about the 3 months before you conceive and then, phew, I've done that, I can go back to my life. It's a whole of life stuff, which is why it's so important to make the changes incrementally and understand the changes that you're making in your lifestyle so that you can stand by them.
And you can
continue to do them. And, you know, there's a fantastic girl on Instagram. She's in America and she had a baby and she talks all about her reducing her exposure to endocrine disrupting chemicals. And she did a few reels leading into Christmas about going to visit her family. And, you know, when you go to your grandmother's bathroom, and she's got reed diffusers all through the bathroom and smelly things in the toilet, and you know, all these perfumes on the bench, and you've got to use the hand wash, and you know, she's walked, had a headache from the minute she walked in there because she was so used to not having that toxic load on her body.
Yeah, and I love what you've said there, and I always say that to my patients. I'm not here to get you pregnant. I'm here to get you a healthy baby. That is the ultimate aim, and that's what we're all wanting, and that's where these toxins, yes, they have an impact on your chances of conceiving, and they have an impact on the health of your pregnancy, but they also have an impact on that lifelong health of that future baby, which is just so precious. So this is something that, and it doesn't need to be huge. These don't need to be massive, you know, scary changes, and you don't need to make them all at once. And I know I'll put a link to the course that you've just released to, that WTF detox, that does go through. We've talked about BPA, we talked about endocrine disrupting chemicals, but, you know, we've just scratched the surface. Yeah. So if you want to know more, I'll put a link in the show notes to that WTF program, and you can delve in to find out more about
that, because I don't believe in a detox. I think a detox don't want to do a 24-hour detox and then just carry on. We want to actually make lifetime changes incrementally that feel right for us. And I guess I view it like a bathtub. We have a whole lot of taps at the top of the tub and a sink, a plug hole. The plug hole is our body's ability to naturally detoxify. But if you've got too many taps on at the top, the plug hole can't work right. So I like to look at each of the taps and decide how much you want to turn it down. And it's a choice. It's up to you. Yeah. But if you don't even know that the taps exist, you can't make that choice.
Yeah. Well, I hope that's given people some insights, because this is an issue that is not going to go away. This is something that we're going to deal with, and I don't want you to be scared by it. I want you to be informed and make some proactive choices that can make a big difference. I mean, looked at that, you know, just those small studies on sperm health, just those small studies on the embryo quality, we know this is making a difference. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your amazing insights, as always, today. And I hope people have really taken away something from this discussion, and we'll put more links in the show notes.
Thanks so much for having me, Tasha. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure. Thanks, Lucy.
Yeah,
bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Conceive Baby podcast. To help you move forward on your journey to pregnancy, I've created your free fertility checklist for you. This checklist provides simple swaps you can make that can have a significant impact on your chances of conceiving and carrying your healthy baby. So be sure to head to conceivebaby.com.au/checklist to download your free fertility checklist today.